Welcome to Beyond the Classroom with Mike Harris. I am your host, Mike Harris, bringing to you 35 years plus of educational expertise, everything to do with the public schools, the private schools, a little bit, and homeschool quite a bit, and things that are peripheral to education, things you do after school, things that parents have to deal with. Been working with homeschoolers since 1994. And so I hope you enjoy today's show. As always, our program is available free of charge on Rumble if you want to watch the video. And anywhere you get your podcast, you'll find us there as well. We hope you enjoy today's show. Well, hi there. Welcome to Beyond the Classroom with Mike Harris. I have a very special guest today. This is my son, Josh Harris. Say hi.
Hello.
Anyway, so today, what I wanted to do is just share with you things that go on beyond the classroom. Some of you have had the experience of having foster kids or adopted kids. Some of you have had students that have learning disabilities. I have two of the three there. Josh was a foster kid for us for a few months, and we adopted him when he was three. He also went through the public school system in special ed. And so I wanted to talk to you about what works, what doesn't work, and we'll just go from there. This will be kind of a free-floating interview. So Josh has said, yep, yeah, sure, right?
Yes, I did.
That's what I thought. So Josh, you went in the, you were homeschooled for your first 4 or 5 years.
Yep.
And then in sixth grade, you went to public school. How was that for you? What was the big difference for you?
Well, the difference was that I just, it was frustrating at first because I didn't really understand what I was supposed to do. And so it ended up working out pretty well. I enjoyed it.
Uh-huh.
And came a long way from doing that.
Yeah, when you were in fifth grade, we thought that we had done about as much as we could do as far as teaching you how to read, how to write. You were pretty good at that. Spell. Even do math to a certain level. When you went into the public school system, our thought was to give you opportunity to be around kids all the time. Now, you struggled with school. Talk about a little bit in that junior high years, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. What was it like interacting with the rest of your peers? Did you just interact with the special ed kids? Did you interact kind of everybody? How'd it go?
Well, I interacted with everybody. Mostly special ed kids because I got along with them the best. Mm-hmm. And, you know, talking with regular kids, you know, it was just, let's see, how can I phrase it? It was pretty cool, but it was also frustrating because, you know, I was trying to tell them, explain to them what was going on and let them know that, hey, you know, I'm in special ed. I'm trying to, you know, learn here, but, you know, it was rough. It was a rough going.
Uh-huh. So what were some of the good things that you experienced in junior high?
Junior high, I, let's see here. I just, you know, I've had a couple good friends that mm-hmm. kept me going and thinking positively. And
what were some of the things that really frustrated you?
I just got swamped with schoolwork. It was just, you know, the teacher would come to me and say, hey, we're going to do all this and name like 20 things. And I'd go, and I'd sit there and I'd go, there's no way to do it. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of frustrating that, you know, I wanted to do all that at the same time, but I couldn't, you know, mentally do that.
Uh-huh. So now, at that time, you were not taking any meds. So I'm going to talk to you guys for a second. So as Josh was growing up, we had a very detailed psychological evaluation with Josh in about sixth grade. And they covered everything. It was a 2 or 3 day eval down at a center in Sacramento.
And we got an idea of pretty much where his strengths and where his weaknesses were. And one of the things was really obvious was attention deficit, memory, being able to remember things long-term, short-term, processing speed. There's a lot of different things. So when you're talking to somebody who might be in the special ed, it's like going to Raley's and looking at the vegetable section. There are no two vegetables that are alike. There are some that are green, but that doesn't mean they're all cucumbers or all squash. There are red ones. Well, a radish and a tomato are very different, even though they're both red. When you look at students, everybody's completely different. So junior high, I think, was a successful time. What we ended up doing is halfway through the day, we saw that Josh was frustrating, and at our local junior high in the afternoon, it was pretty much electives. And Josh was frustrated and didn't really want to do the electives. We tried art, and how did you do in art?
Not my strong suit, that's for sure.
Yeah, and the other options were no better. And so he wasn't going to play in the band. He wasn't going to do art. There weren't a lot of choices. So we actually had our next-door neighbor come pick Josh up. And he worked on repairing and putting together bicycles for 6 months. So we actually pulled Josh out after 4.5 hours. There's a legal limit of how much time you have to be in school for the school to get full attendance. And that means full funding. And schools are usually pretty good about, well, if you want to take him the rest of the time, we're good to give him up at the halfway point. And so Josh effectively did about 2/3 of a day at school. And then he did the last 2/3. And as part of his individual education plan, we designed what those afternoons would look like. And I think that was much more successful than having Josh just stay at school. That was a bit frustrating. Then came the big high school. And we were looking at, so what we wanted Josh to get out of high school was to get some skills. We knew that getting a diploma going through the regular system was probably not going to be the track. And so we started working with the high school, even as a freshman, to get him so that he's not just stuck in classes where he's frustrated all day. And so you were in what was called a special day class. Who was your teacher? Mrs. Vaughn? Was that her name?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mrs. Vaughn. Anyway, and so you had describe some of the other kids that were in your class.
There was a couple kids in their class who were exactly like, pretty much like me, and you know, they pretty much, our day was we'd show up and try to do the schoolwork. And those kids were pretty smart. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of them that were just funny to watch. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the teacher would tell them, do your homework. And they'd look at her, do your homework. And so it's kind of funny. I was one of those kids that she'd tell me to do my homework, and I'd tell her, do your homework. And so I just laughed at that and got the whole class to think it was kind of funny.
So needless to say, we knew all Josh's teachers very well. Everybody knew his name the first day. So it was one of those things where, yeah. But one of the things we saw in those classes was there didn't seem to be a lot of educational progression. You know, in ninth grade, they were having you do fractions and decimals. Well, we did fractions and decimals in fifth grade, and you were worse in ninth grade than you were in fifth grade. Mm-hmm. Talk about the academic part. Were you learning anything in those classes?
No, not one bit.
Were you having fun?
Oh, yeah, I had fun.
So that was Josh. Josh had fun through high school. I don't think you learned a whole ton, and that didn't work out particularly well for you. But that was how the school was like, okay, he's not in trouble. That's good. I think you had PE every semester all the way through high school.
Oh, yeah.
That was real important. At what point did we try, do you remember when we tried to start taking meds? Because we were looking for something that would help Josh focus better. And there were several different brands of things that we looked at. And so do you remember the first ones, what that felt like? What did it do to your, how did it make you feel when you were were taking meds?
The first med I took just basically wiped me out. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't cope with it. And so that was the first med. Second one I tried, you know, I thought worked first, but it ended up doing about the same. Mm-hmm. And so I think after two or three times, maybe more, I got to the right med and it's balanced. So,
well, I'm thinking in high school.
Oh,
yeah.
That was
high school. Ouch. I remember you would take stuff and then you would, how did that make your stomach feel? Was that it?
Oh, it was not good.
Yeah.
I wanted to go to the cafeteria and eat lunch. I'd go, I'm not hungry. So mm-hmm. I'd miss, you know, a couple of days worth of that. And I just, the meds just weren't doing it for me.
Yeah. And to the point where what we saw as parents is like, okay, let's try this, see how it works. Well, the side effects of the meds, it affects your stomach, it affects your mood, it affected your ability to stay focused and to stay awake. And we had tried two or three different versions of it. We had a good pediatrician, and pretty much when we had gone through the entire gamut of what was available, it says, well, which one do you like? You know, this is what this will do, and this is what they won't. And ultimately, Josh, as far as high school goes, you said, I like meds or I don't like meds.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, you pretty much just said you don't like meds. And you're like, I'm not taking them anymore. And it got to the point where we as parents couldn't make him take the meds. And that was just going to cause you feeling miserable and fight us on it. And you were like, nope, not going to do it, not going to do it, not going to do it. But you went through high school fairly happy. One of the things that Josh did is, I think in 4 years, Josh didn't miss a single day of school because he always wanted to get up and go to school. Why? Because he wanted to screw around with his friends, right?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So as we looked at Josh going through school, we went to our local school, Union Mine High School. And one of the things that they will tell you in special ed is that they have a program called Workability, which is to take students that are in that category and help them get jobs, teach them some job skills. Our experience is that that was not true. They said that we were looking at Josh as a freshman, as a 14-year-old, saying, yes, he could use that right now, because we know it's going to take a long time for him to get those skills. We don't want him to be 18, graduate from high school and having nothing. And he's not going to learn at the same pace that somebody else is going to learn. And so we pushed to have him get involved in Workability. And for month after month, year after year, semester after semester, they just kept saying, well, no, it doesn't quite qualify. Don't have the money yet. We only have so many spaces. It turned out that by the time he got to be a senior, he got in the Workability program and they gave him 2.5 hours a week. And they could do that for one semester and then the funding was up. So please watch that. When they say we have this program, don't count on that being actually true. Because it is funded separately and you may or may not even qualify. They always take the oldest kids first. And so Josh had to get to where he was virtually the oldest kid there before he finally got into the program. And then it was a pretty good program, I think, for a semester. You were down at Ponderosa High School at the print shop. How'd that work?
It was pretty fun. Uh-huh. The guy there was just great. I got to learn how to put their, it's kind of funny, actually. Even though I went to Union Mine, I went to Ponderosa and did a bunch of, like printing on a cup, like the name of the school or, you know, the athletics. I got to help put logos on their shirts and whatever else. And that was pretty fun. And near the end of the time that I worked there, the guy goes, hey, do you want to do like your own shirt and put a logo on it? So I'm cool. So I chose my favorite football team and I put it on there, and it turned out pretty cool. And so it was fun. I liked it.
Mm-hmm. All right. So you graduated high school. And then it was now what? You're kind of old for a high school kid, but you were 19 when you graduated high school. And then it was, what do we do next? And so in the special ed world, you can, and the public local school is responsible for education up until the age of 22, or you have a high school diploma. Well, Josh did not go the diploma route. So our local school district has a up till year 22 program, and they meet over by the city pool, actually in Placerville. They have a facility there on Pacific Street, and they have students that would stay there, and they would basically go in the morning. You'd have class till noon or 1 o'clock, and school would just continue. So you weren't in the regular high school. You were there for about 6 months. Talk to me about that.
It was pretty cool. They taught you how to do they taught you how to cook meals, and for when you go out in the real world, they wanted you to be able to have, you know, jobs, or they wanted to have, you know, you be ready. Mm-hmm. So for my example, I went there and I was like, well, this is pretty cool. And I had a couple of friends that went there. So we just clowned around and hung out most of the time. And I ended up just saying, well, I don't like this very much.
Yeah, it seemed like just a more high school, only in a smaller group with kids that were, in your view, more handicapped than you were.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're like, I'm not them, is what we got from you. And so then it became time to say, okay, you had got to age 20 by then, and you were eligible for a program. And there are three in California. One is at UCLA, one is at Taft Junior College near Bakersfield, and the other one is Fresno State, for adults with disabilities to go and actually take college classes, live in a dorm environment. And so we were able to get that program for you, and you were qualified because you were an Alta regional client. For adults with disabilities, being a regional center client allows you to get a lot of access to adults with disabilities. If you haven't looked into that, you need to look into that when you're fairly young. You need to start that process getting in there when you're in ninth grade or so, because if you wait till you're 17 and then you try and qualify, you won't. They'll say, well, you made it through this far. So that's our experience. So we had Josh qualified many years before and had been working with them. And at age 20, you were able to get fully funded to go to Fresno State for a year. And actually, it was a 2-year program. Let's talk about the first year you were there. So tell me, what did you do? This is where life gets really interesting.
Well, so I showed up the first day, and everything started going good for about a week. And then I was doing my classes and stuff and doing what I was supposed to do. And then I just, you know, started drinking and partying. And eventually it got me kicked out, which now I'm like, well, I wish I hadn't done that. But, you know, I did that, and it just started going downhill from there, which I tried to not. Well, what I did was I just said, you can't make me do this work. You can't make me do anything. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And turned out bad. And I ended up going to the principal's office a lot. And she finally said, you know, we're going to kick you out of here because you're drinking, and we told you to quit doing that. And so I started drinking some more, and she goes, are you gonna quit drinking? Yeah. Went back to my dorms and drank that night, and next morning I looked on my computer because I had my classes on the computer, and sure enough there was a meeting with her, and I went, uh-oh. So I went to the meeting, and that was it. She just told me, she goes, I'm gonna call your dad, and you're out of here. And I was like, well, can you give me one more chance? And she goes, I've given you 100 chances and you don't seem like you want to be here. So see ya.
How hard is it for somebody in your condition, the people that are with you, how easy is it for you to get into that? I want to drink or I want to do drugs. Why did you do that? Why did you choose that route? You think?
I think it was just I want to try it out. And as soon as I took one drink, that was all bad for me. I just, from there on, I couldn't stop drinking and it was all bad. It caused a lot of issues. And I just, I think I stopped taking meds is what really happened. And I just quit thinking right. And, I'm not blaming my meds. I'm just saying that I just chose to go down a road that was not a good one to go down.
So we got the call. We talked to the school all through that year. In November, life was really good. In February, it was like, well, things are going a little funky here. But again, you have to realize now you're having an adult. This is not a kid that's living with you at home. It's not somebody who's a minor. So choices that you make as an adult, even whether you're a special ed or not, are adult choices. And so by April, we had got contact by the principal of the school at Fresno State. And she said, yeah, this is, we're going to roll out this next week and then you need to pick him up. He's at the end. He's not welcome back next year. He needs to be more mature. He's just not getting anything out of the program because he just doesn't want to be here. He'd rather do what he wants to do. And so we picked him up. And as we drove home, it put us in a difficult position. Now what do you do? You have now a 20-year-old that wants to drink, doesn't want to take any meds, doesn't want to work particularly. And so we didn't necessarily want him in our house having to babysit a 20-year-old. You were not particularly pleasant to be around.
No.
Yeah. And what was going through your mind as far as emotions go at that time? Anger, fear, what?
Both of those, a lot of anger, and I don't know why. I guess it was mostly that I just didn't want to be told what to do. Mm-hmm. And the second one was I was afraid that, it's like, well, not a whole lot of fear. It was just more anger and that I just wanted to be a rebel and not care about, mm-hmm. anything. And finally, I just realized, I was like, I'm just going to do what I want to do, and oh well.
So we had Josh, and we got a little studio apartment in Pollock Pines, not too far from here, and set Josh up to have his own space, and then started working with him, got him a bus pass so he could get to and from work, started trying to find part-time jobs for him, did that June, July, August, September, and you just couldn't keep a job. You didn't really want to do a job. You just wanted to do what you wanted to do. And I think it was around October, he said, I don't need you. I can do everything myself. What was going on in your head at that point?
Well, I didn't take meds at all.
Yeah.
And, I just wasn't mentally all there. I just thought, I was like, well, to heck with everybody else. I'm just going to do what I want to do. And
yeah, I remember a conversation where I said, well, if we need to take care of you, you've got to get this and this and this kind of straightened up in your life. And I remember your response to us was something to the effect of, I don't need you. I'm fine. Well, and I would respond with, to give you a place to live. I don't need a place to live. I can just hang out with my friends. Though, you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So in October, that was the rainiest year of the last 20 years. Josh decided, I don't need you. I don't need the apartment. And you just moved out and to hang out with some friends. This was the beginning of your homeless 9 months. So talk to me about the beginning when you decided, I'm going to just go hang with friends. How'd that work out for you? And what happened?
Well, first of all, I told my dad, yes, I'm going to, do what I want to do. And that's when I became homeless. When I became homeless, the very first day was terrible. It rained and it stormed and I was cold and wet. And I was like, well, what do I do now? And so I was walking. I went for a walk and I was walking around and I got picked, another homeless guy comes up to me and goes, hey, you need a place to stay? I go, yeah. So I stayed with him for, however long. And that just went downhill from there. I just started doing drugs and not the easy drugs, the hard drugs. And it just screwed with my mind. And I just drank. And once I had one sip, I'd finish a whole 30 pack in probably less than a day. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, a couple bottles of whiskey, and then I'd call it good for the day. And
where'd you get the money or where'd you get the resources to get those? Cause I couldn't afford a 6 pack of beer a day and I made money. Where'd you get it?
I either flew a sign, as they call it. Or I just went in the store, grabbed what I wanted, and walked out the front door.
Uh-huh.
And I'd come out, and so I'd bring back to the camp, two or three 30 packs of beer and a whole bunch of whiskey and whatever I could find. And I sold some of that for drugs, and I got the drugs, and so I started doing the hard drugs, meth and stuff. And that was just not fun.
It was not fun for anybody. We would see Josh. I lived and worked in downtown Placerville. And so I would see Josh all the time and I would stop and we'd say hi. And pretty much my thing was, so you ready to join the real world yet? And your response was,
Nope.
It wasn't. And so, took you out to lunch or buy a Coke or something like that. I don't know if you all have been to Jack in the Box off Missouri Flat Road. There's a little sign that says no solicitation. That was Josh's flying spot. And so we call that Josh's sign. That's pretty much why they put it up, because Josh was there all the time. So I always knew I could find him. But it was a really rough 9 months. It was a hard winter, really cold, that sort of thing. How'd you make it through the winter? Because it was so cold.
Through the winter, I was in a homeless camp and we, looked after each other somewhat, not the way that, it's supposed to be, but he went and got a couple heaters and put them in our tent.
You ever had a tent burn down?
That's a funny story. So I was sleeping one night and, I woke up and I looked up and it was raining and I go, what is this? I looked around. My tent had burned down because I left the heater on. It fell over and burned up my whole tent. So I was sitting and I was like, well, what do I do now? So I need another tent. So they went and stole another tent for me, a bigger one. They said, don't do it again. What did I do? I set two of them up in my tent and lit the whole thing on fire. And so eventually I just said, I guess I'll just live, I won't live in a tent. So it was really cold and I froze a lot.
Yeah. And you had some physical issues. I know that your feet, had an issue. What was up with your feet that one time?
My feet. So one thing you never do when it rains is get your feet wet. If you get your feet wet, what you want to do is take your shoes and socks off immediately, dry out your feet, and put powder on them. There's a powder that you put that what it does is it dries out your feet pretty well. And so anyways, my feet... they got soaked, and I left my shoes on, and I went to bed. I woke up the next morning, and I went to stand on my feet, and I couldn't stand on my feet. And so I took my shoes and socks off, and my feet had skin had fallen off, and they had cracked, and they were bleeding, and they were hurting. And so I was like, well, I got to go fly a sign. I got to get money. So one of the camp guys comes in. This is buying Kmart, of course. One of them came in and told me, he goes, hey, he's like, do you need anything? I was like, I can't move. And he goes, you have trench foot. And so he took a, so what he did is he took a rubbing alcohol and he put it in a bucket and filled it up with water, put my feet in there. Boy, did that burn. Then after that, he had some powder and I put it on my feet. And about a week later, my feet got better. I was like, cool, I'm ready to go back out there. And it rained again and my feet got soaked. And the same thing happened, except this time it got to where I couldn't walk at all for about 2 months. So I was laid up in my tent and I was like, well, I can't eat or do anything. So I sat there and did drugs and got skinnier and skinnier. And it was bad.
Yeah. So let's fast forward a bit. During this time, Josh had been on the radar of our local sheriff's department. They really liked him. Because I was principal at a local school, I knew most of the deputies and sergeants, and they knew Josh's story. And it was all of us really as a team trying to get him to not just say, I want to do what I want to do. And so he got arrested a couple of times. The last time it was kind of comical. But this is what law enforcement will do for you, even though it seems like they're doing it to you, is he got a ticket for putting trash on the ground outside of Jack in the Box, and another one for, I think, crossing without a red light or something.
Jaywalking.
And that was a way to get him off the street for a little while. Then ultimately, they got to the point where they said, you know, you don't seem to be getting the hint. And you had spent, you know, total maybe 10, 15 days in jail over a period of a few months. You know, he'd go in for a day or two, then they'd kick him out, and then he'd go in for another 3 or 4 days, and they'd kick him out. Same thing, intoxication in public, or, you know, and they would give you a promise to appear for a ticket that they would give you. And then ultimately, they kind of said, well, here's the deal. And they were talking to me this whole time and said, you know, you can either go to a rehab place, or we're going to start throwing the book at you and send you to jail. And you made a turnaround about there in your head. Talk to us a little bit about that. What was going on in your head where you were saying, I'm done with this?
Well, it's kind of a funny story to that. Well, not funny, but, well, the last time I got locked up, I was over across from Walmart in a parking lot, and I was looking at a car and stuff, and another guy was with me, and we were looking at the car and stuff, and I ended up breaking the car door. Well, we opened up the car. Well, I opened the car door, and and someone came by and saw. And so I was about halfway down to a Jack in the Box by Little Caesars. I was in Little Caesars parking lot. And a sheriff pulls up to me and says, hey, come here. So I go, okay. So I walk over and he goes, did you just break into a car? I go, yeah. And he was like, okay. And he was like, all right, stay here. So he ran my name and stuff. It came back that I had a warrant, and it came back as yes, that I had broken into that car. And so he handcuffed me, put me in the back of the car, took me to jail. I sat in there for a little bit, And there's some there's a Christian group in there, a group of guys. And I basically just, I was talking to one of them. He said, you should come to our group. And so I came to the group and we were reading the Bible and stuff. And one of the cops comes in and says, hey, you're getting out tomorrow. Okay, cool. Well, there was a different colored man that came into the jail, and none of us wanted him in our cell because, you know, no one did. Me, I was afraid that if he was in my cell, that all the white supremacy guys would get on, you know, would tear me up. So I just said, you know what? I was like, he can stay in here. We ended up praying and talking and stuff. And I told him, I was like, I'm getting out tomorrow. I went downstairs and prayed with the group. And they said, have a good time. And, but before that, I just, you know, I thought in my head, I was like, I'm done with this lifestyle. I want to go home. And I even met with my mom and with my dad a couple of times. And I was crying, you know, and I was done. I was like, I want to go home. You know, I just want to get my life together. And so then the next day, you know, or a week later, my mom comes and picks me up. And I run out there and give her a big old hug. We go get something to eat. And we talk on the way there and way home. And that was that. I just, you know, said I need to get back with the Lord. And the Lord turned my life around again.
Now, you grew up as in a Christian household.
Yes.
I don't think there was ever a time where you doubted God existed as you were growing up. But there was definitely a time where you're like, I don't care what God has to say. In the same way you were thinking, I don't care what you have to say, Dad, or I don't care what you have to say, Mom. Is that a pretty accurate description?
Yeah.
So one of the conditions, and as we followed up here, so this would have been, you were about 23 at the time, we had a small guest house that we built, and so we moved Josh into that, and the conditions were, you don't drink ever, you treat everybody with respect, and you're not a jerk. I don't know. We probably said it in worse words than that.
Yeah.
Don't be a fill in the blank.
Yeah.
You don't do drugs, and you have to go to a psychologist. We've got to get you on meds because a lot of this was Josh could not control himself, and so while there was, I think, some addiction stuff, Josh is blessed in that he didn't have this constant craving for alcohol and drugs. It seemed to be that those were something you did as a coping mechanism more. And so we took you to a local psychologist, and you've been with him now 5-6 years, and got you on meds. And it took 2 or 3 rounds. How have the meds affected you as an adult? 'Cause they're not without side effects.
You know, some days are better than others. Some days I just feel terrible, but, you know, I always look at it as it's better that I take meds and feel terrible than the outcome again. So, you know, seeing a psychologist is great. He's, you know, I talk to him about all sorts of things and how to cope with it. And it's just great to have a, you know, someone to talk to.
How is the church, specifically our pastor, shout out to Jim Eggers, how has that affected your life? And you're now living and have been living for a couple of years with a gentleman from our church, renting a room a couple of miles from our house. So you're pretty close. But how has the church affected your ability to cope as you've gone through these last few years?
Church has been there a lot. Thank you very much. And especially thanks to Pastor Jim. He was there for me all the time, and a very great friend, pretty much family. Mm-hmm. And just the church body prayed for me, And it was great.
Yeah. Well, and Josh, how old are you now?
I'm 28 years old.
So he's 28. I think we have a good relationship. I think we've always had a good relationship, even when you were homeless. but you had to go through that time. And so I want to encourage you that, don't write somebody off, but you do have to toe the line. And that's a tough balance. If we just gave you everything you wanted to do, nothing would happen. If you had total freedom, you would abuse it. If you had control over your life, you would rebel against it. And that's a difficult thing for all parents who have adults who are not just thriving on their own. And it's a journey that we continue to go through and I think have a good relationship. Josh and I both ride motorcycles. That's been a highlight. So we have almost the same identical bike, but I sold mine a couple of months ago. We got a better one. So Josh has got he's got a great bike, and mine is a different great bike. So so that's a lot of fun. So you're mobile, you're able to get places. Why don't you want to drive a car? I've always wondered that. And I mean, I know the question, but tell the audience.
To be honest, I'm just afraid. I tried it one time and it just scared the heck out of me. And it's something new. And I don't think I'm ever going to drive. I just don't want to end up wrecking it, because I've heard all these stories about people wrecking their cars and they don't come out from it. So it's like,
so you're on the motorcycle because people survive really well when they crash those, right?
I guess so.
All right. Well, we're about out of time. Yeah. But I want to thank you, Josh. And I think the audience will enjoy this little adventure, a little bit of our story. And, we love you. God loves you. And you're a great influence on those people that you help, because you spend time with people who, and you understand folks that nobody else understands.
Oh yeah.
And you have the patience that other people don't have.
Real quickly.
Yeah.
When I was in high school, all the special ed kids, a lot of them got picked on and stuff. And me being not putting up with that, I'd get in a lot of fights and stuff and get in trouble for it. But, it was worth it because no one else was going to stand up for him. And me going through high school and stuff, people would stand up for me too, because I got made fun of for being special ed and stuff. So I just would tell them, why are you making fun of me? We're all the same people. Some have different disabilities, but so what? Mm-hmm. We're all the same. And I thank God for that.
That's it for today's episode of Beyond the Classroom with Mike Harris. This is Mike Harris wishing you just a terrific day, asking you to consider supporting some of our local businesses with your patronage. There's a lot of after school, whether it's New Man's Karate or Onstage Productions. Or if you want to get outside, find a missionary that you work with, that you can have a relationship with. Some excellent folks that I would recommend are Katrina and James Beach and The Nest. If you want to find out more about them, just Google The Nest Costa Rica, and you'll find all about them. Doing great work down there with the Bree Bree. And I wish you just a terrific day. God bless.